Happy Monday and thank you for joining me today. I'm currently sitting on a stool in the guest room closet, but things happen. It is great to be back here. I'm so happy to have all of you here. Thank you so very much for joining me today. So it started off as a casual remark over lunch in Baltimore, Maryland. It was in the late fall of 1972, and Robert Brown, the director of the IRS's intelligence unit, was meeting with George Beall. George Beall is the U.S. attorney for Maryland at the time. He's one of the local prosecutors. And Director Brown mentions, like, this matter of a curiosity to George Beall. And Director Brown said that some of the public officials there just didn't jibe with him. And when he said that, the public officials in this case were being under questioned. They were various public officials in the government had come under suspicion for money problems. And you know, out of all of the problems to be in trouble for in the world, money is definitely not one of the good ones. Especially if you're being questioned or even under this umbrella of suspicion by the freaking director of the IRS's intelligence unit. But this local prosecutor, George Beall, said, yeah, he had been hearing rumors of local officials taking kickbacks from government contractors. Now that's a crime. It's one thing to have money problems, one thing to have financial problems as a government official, but it's also just a completely different thing if you yourself are illegally intercepting those funds from unofficial or surreptitious channels for either personal or political gain. And as the investigation went on, as the investigation got more intrusive, it led them to the governor of Maryland, the highest official, the executive chief in the state. The governor of Maryland later became the vice president of the United States to Richard Nixon. And it's not that after he said yes to being Nixon's guy, that those allegations and trail of money just went away. No, because dude was still doing it. Dude was still participating in this in the White House. Now, Vice President Spiro Agnew was overtly accepting envelopes of cash in his office at the White House as the Vice President of the United States. So it's not just, oh, change of position, change of scenery, welcome to Washington, D.C. I have a new job now and I have to stop doing this because I'm like literally the second highest person in the country right now. Dude kept participating in this. And I mean, this was just insane. He was already under investigation and suspicion for alleged bribes, extortion, tax fraud. Next thing you know, the U.S. Justice Department starts looking into this and starts breathing down his neck. And this spells out big trouble for Agnew. Okay, federal prosecutors are looking at me now. What's plan B? There was no plan B. Until there was. Agnew was not a plan B kind of guy. He's more so like a plan A kind of guy. Defiant and resistant, gonna stick it out to the end. And he literally did have fun attacking the press in the most bombastic and vile way. And when those federal prosecutors came after Vice President Spiro Agnew with the potential of a federal indictment and potential jail time looming over his head and political career, what did he do? Well, he made a vehement promise to his supporters, vowing that he ain't going nowhere.
The Washington Week, news and analysis. I'm Neil Strauser, CBS News, reporting on the CBS Radio Network.
I will not resign if indicted. I will not resign if indicted.
It was an angry vice president taking his stand at the end of a week of maneuvering that absorbed this Capitol. On Tuesday, there was the formal Justice Department announcement of the decision to begin presenting evidence about alleged kickbacks from Maryland contractors to a federal grand jury, and Spiro Agnew's immediate surprise visit to the leadership of the House of Representatives.
Quote, I will not resign if indicted. I will not resign if indicted. Sorry, guys. So that was Agnew in 1973, right? The Vice President of the United States being defiant and stern about not resigning, fending off these federal prosecutors. Regardless, if a federal indictment comes my way, I will stand here as your Vice President and I'm not going anywhere. So he made that promise. That's him in 1973, making that promise to his supporters that he will not resign if indicted. That was on September 29th, 1973. 12 days later, almost poetically in a sense, he was out. He was out of office.
This is a CBS News special report. The vice president resigns. Here is correspondent Walter Cronkite. Good evening. Vice President Agnew, burying himself as a tax cheat, resigned today under an agreement which protects him from prosecution on charges of grafting. And a federal prosecutor brought in from Chicago especially to deal with the Agnew case said, "I have never seen a stronger case of bribery or extortion." A Justice Department statement submitted to federal court in Baltimore as Agnew pleaded no contest to evading taxes in 1967 detailed in 40 pages evidence of, quote, a pattern of substantial cash payments to Agnew. They began, it is alleged, in Agnew's first political post, chief executive of Baltimore County, and continued through his tenure as governor of Maryland and his first term as vice president. For the tax evasion, Agnew was fined $10,000 and put on probation for 3 years. The resignation, only the second by a vice president in the nation's history, and the first was under very different circumstances, presents a new problem for President Nixon.
You know, if you're not careful about what you say, prior statements can become both hysterical and presumptuous in the end. So, you know, it's definitely careful to watch what you say. So, Agnew vows to his supporters that he's not leaving and then proceeds to leave. It's almost just poetic. It's almost comedic timing in a sense. I mean, that day, literally in 1973, as the Vice President of the United States, 12 days later, had resigned, the Attorney General, Elliot Richardson, literally went up to the courthouse to direct that prosecution. It was literally unprecedented because it's not every day that you see a vice president walk into a courtroom getting ready to be criminally charged, resigning under the threat of prosecution. This is from the New York Times. Quote, the tall, well-built, well-groomed man stood stock still, his unmoving hands straight at his side, the central figure in a crowded fifth-floor courtroom in the old post office building. Walnut paneling, blue carpet, oversized brass eagles atop the two American flags, flanking the bench. It was an unlikely setting for a political career to end in disgrace. But that is where Spiro Theodore Agnew last Wednesday admitted to a felony and where his weeks of defiant posturing ended with the disclosure that he'd resigned the vice presidency of the United States. The courtroom was dead silent as Judge Hoffman said the words to Mr. Agnew for the first time. You are submitting your resignation as vice president of the United States. I want you to know that no federal court could require you to take this action. Mr. Agnew assented. He knew. So that was reporting from the New York Times back in 1973. This whole thing started off as a casual remark with the IRS director for the intelligence unit, Robert Brown, and George Beall, this local attorney, this local prosecutor in Maryland, talking about potential kickbacks, you know, from public officials. Needless to say, it led them all the way to the freaking White House. Major bombshell there. But after all that talk, after all that quacking about, I will not resign if indicted, I will not resign if indicted, Spiro Agnew left the White House. He resigned 12 days later after making that statement. That was 1973. This is 2023. And this time, it is not a vice president nor a former governor, but a former president. Donald John Trump. He is running for a second term after his diametrically, unflinchingly unethical insurrectionist-themed first term was a complete and total mesh. But, I mean, that's just an understatement. But he's running for a second term and he's under various investigations. Trump recently just said that if he's indicted, he would not jump out of the 2024 presidential race. Trump recently just said that if he is indicted, he's not going to drop out the race. Okay, history repeating itself. We'll see. I mean, this is literally a headline for the history books. This is from CNBC. Quote, Trump pledges to stay in 2024 presidential race even if he is criminally charged. I will say, though, on the front, there is some minor pushback with the former Republican governor of Arkansas, Asa Hutchinson. Saying that he should drop out if he is indicted. Hutchinson told USA Today, quote, it doesn't mean that he's guilty or, you know, he should be charged, but it's just a distraction that would be unnecessary for somebody who's seeking the highest office in the land. The fact that there is just a lot of turmoil out there with the number of investigations going on, end quote. excuse me. That's just one piece of this puzzle here. The other part is larger and more further reaching, because it's one thing to pull a Spiro Agnew and say that you won't leave if indicted. You're not going to drop out of running for president if indicted. Okay, classic Trump. That's fine. No one's surprised. But another thing, it's a completely different thing to not just say that, but also to attack the prosecutors and actively dismantle the system in which you are under investigation. You can call them zealous and you can call them corrupt, but by dissecting the system that's investigating you, that's not right in legal terms. That's not right in layman terms. As far as litigation goes, it is counterintuitive to how a democratic legal system is supposed to operate. We are a democratic republic, and there are three legitimate branches that hold this constitutional democracy together: executive, judicial, legislative. But what happens when you have allies in some of those branches that can and are willing to go after and dismantle and disseminate the people and the investigations that wish you harm, whether that's political or legal harm? If you are so desperate as to avoid the repercussions for your actions that you willingly know were wrong, and you have allies like that, you have allies that are willing to be so, you know, to try anything that's essentially remotely obsequious for your benefit, whether that's political or personal, what happens then? What happens if they do that? But what happens when all the hypotheticals are scratched and that process begins to take place? Well, I'm not being hyperbolic here. I wish I was, but this is already happening. Throughout Trump's presidency, he was the most incessant and vituperative in his attacks on the press and law enforcement agencies. And now his allies are acting on that by seeking entry into an open investigation involving him. This is from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Quote, Republicans demand oversight of prosecutors amid Trump probe. End quote. I mean, it's just absolutely historical, but this is happening as terms, you know, as far as seeing this action take place in other countries and other places where they are dismantling, where their autocrats are dismantling the legal system because, you know, it doesn't benefit them. This is happening here. Quote, the Georgia House approved a measure to create a new state board that could punish or oust district attorneys, the latest step in an ongoing campaign by Republicans to exert oversight over prosecutors they seek as skirting their duties. Skirting their duties? So yeah, that's a nice little cover up there to essentially divert from what you're actually trying to do. The article goes on to say here, quote, the measure passed the House 98-75 on Monday. The objections of Democrats and prominent prosecutors. Among them is Fulton County District Attorney Fani Willis, who is leading an ongoing probe of Donald Trump. Republicans have rallied around the overhaul as a way to rein in, quote, rogue prosecutors. Rogue prosecutors, they say. Continued, quote, powerful Republicans have put it on the fast track. The Georgia Senate has passed a similar version, and the effort is backed by both Governor Brian Kemp and Lieutenant Governor Burt Jones. End quote. Let's just pause right there. Should I fail to mention, I'd be remiss if I didn't say that currently the Lieutenant Governor Burt Jones is also himself under investigation. Lieutenant Governor Jones, of course, is under investigation for 2020 election interference. His name was a target in the investigation of efforts to overturn the election in which the Fulton County District Attorney Fani Willis is currently investigating. So, oh yeah, I would also support that, most definitely. I would definitely support, you know, overhauling those rogue prosecutors. I'm totally not a person of interest in this investigation. So, yeah, I mean, this is all happening at once. I mean, once again, literally prosecutors, Republicans in the state of Georgia are seeking to overhaul rogue prosecutors. They are essentially seeking to reach into this, to have a look at this investigation. Now, they're not specifically saying, oh yeah, we want to target and dismantle the Trump investigation, what's happening in Fulton County over that election interference case. But, you know, it does have a clear line of what they're trying to do. This is from David Graham at The Atlantic 2 months ago. The headline of this article is A Guide to the Possible Forthcoming Indictments of Donald Trump. And of course, Donald Trump announced in November of last year that he was running to be president again. But, you know, the criminal law does not, the criminal law essentially is not, running for president of the United States does not make you immune to criminal prosecution. It doesn't mean that the criminal law cannot reach you, because it conceivably can. Mr. Graham writes here, quote, at some point this year, perhaps as soon as this month, the former president of the United States, Donald Trump, may be charged with a serious crime. After a years-long elaborate dance with the law in which he actually usually stayed just one step ahead, Donald Trump now faces at least three serious investigations that could produce criminal charges. He denies wrongdoing in all cases, but many legal experts think that prosecutors have grounds to charge him as well. Others believe that Trump shouldn't be charged, or that prosecutors might choose not to charge him even if they can. What actually happens to him is essentially unpredictable. We don't know what pieces of evidence or even what investigations might exist that aren't public. We don't know what prosecutors or how prosecutors will yield the discretion the law affords them. And of course, we don't know how a jury might fall on any charges that end up being tried. End quote. So the first investigation that he cites in his piece is that one out of Fulton County. And so Fulton County is definitely the first one. This essentially was the first movement from the investigation in Fulton County, Georgia. This is where Fannie Willis opened that investigation. So he's the local DA there. And a special grand jury has been commenced. They write down are conducting a lengthy investigation. This investigation began last summer in June of 2022. And it concluded just earlier last month. So it concluded earlier in December. And the district attorney there, Fannie Willis, she has requested the panel after essentially audio emerged in January of 2021. You remember when we broke it on this show from that Washington Post reporter? That Trump pressured the Georgia Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger to, quote, find 11,780 votes in the state to surpass Joe Biden's tally so he could win Georgia effectively. To literally steal the state of Georgia away from the viable presidential elect. From the viable president elect. Literally, after the election is over, Trump pulls this. The audio is leaked, the call is released out into the public, Washington Post reporter breaks it, bam. This investigation opens. So Fulton County is right now one of the investigations that's being looked at. We also, of course, have the Mar-a-Lago documents. Right now, the former president is literally under investigation for taking nearly 3,000 documents home. The U.S. Justice Department is looking into that. That is currently still an active matter under investigation. On top of the Mar-a-Lago documents case, we also have January 6th, the former president's culpability in literally inciting an insurrection against the United States of America. His supporters going to do so. So all of this is happening at once. All of this is unfolding. And it's not only January 6th in terms of inciting an insurrection against the United States and, you know, directing your supporters towards the Capitol to carry out that insurrection to potentially harm lawmakers, in fact. But it's also the efforts to, it's also this concerted effort, this coordinated effort to gather up local Republican lawmakers across the country, not just in D.C., in Congress, but also local Republican officials, local Republican lawmakers to help you carry out this act in stealing the election, in stealing the 2020 presidential election so you rightfully can stay there in office. It is one thing to say that you will not resign if indicted. You will not resign if indicted as the Vice President of the United States. It is one thing to say, I will not resign if indicted as a presidential candidate. But it is a completely other thing to not only say that, but also to yield your allies against the very systems that are coming after you because of what you have done. It is a completely other thing if you yield your allies against those systems to dismantle it, to attack it, to destroy it. That is a completely different thing. That is something unlike anything we have ever seen before in this country. But it is happening right now. It is actively happening. They are already getting started. We'll be right back.
If you looked at America like a bird, and that was all you knew, would you really understand it with just that point of view? We've got a different way to look at it. From right here on the ground, we don't just see United States, we see United Towns. From where we sit, just down the street, near the post office, by the park, when we stop and look around, what we see are sparks. Sparks of hope, of compassion, of communities who stand firm, when neighbors lift each other up, expecting nothing in return. We're grateful for what you bring and all the sparks you've shown and the thousands of towns that we get to call home.
Whether you put down your phone to be there for your daughter, or pick up your phone to call a helpline for your roommate, when it comes to mental health, now more than ever, every action counts.
Welcome back. So this is going to be a little bit of a brief episode because there are lots of other stuff in the works right now. Later on this week, I will be posting an episode, and it'll be a TJPS exclusive with the 18-year-old mayor of Earl, Arkansas. That is coming up very, very soon. He is an impressive young man, an incredible candidate that essentially ran to be the mayor of Earl, Arkansas, and then won that election and is now leading a city. So we're going to be talking about that coming up later this week in that exclusive interview here on the Jeremiah Patterson Show. In addition to that, this Saturday, we also have an exclusive interview with the Ghana female presidential candidate. This is a woman who is running to be the first female president of Ghana. She's going to be joining us here on the Jeremiah Patterson Show. Once again, that is another exclusive. So, you know, I mean, honestly, I mean, I'm amazed by, you know, what we've been able to book here, but this is incredible that this is happening here on the Jeremiah Patterson Show after 4 years of hard work and, you know, strenuous commitment to what you believe in. It is definitely something to see all of your dreams coming true and to making it happen. So all that is coming up more here on the Jeremiah Patterson Show, including special reports and tons of interviews next month as well. In addition to this, I also have two other podcasts. One is called A Butterfly in the Making. We just wrapped up season one of that. Season two will be launched next month, but definitely go check that out. It's an introspection in season one, but season two definitely focuses on, you know, more so positivity and advice and essentially spreading your wings and preparing to fly like a butterfly in this bifurcated and ambivalent and, you know, bitter world. It's definitely hard to survive, but we must remember that butterflies also do have a hard path and on their way to becoming these beautiful, vibrant creatures that we so admire on this earth. So that's coming up as well. On top of that, U.S. presidents, my podcast about our presidents 1 through 44, their administrations, their downfalls, everything that happened throughout their administration. New episodes coming to that as well soon. Every Thursday, of course, on U.S. presidents. For Butterfly in the Making, it is also every Thursday. Here on the Jeremiah Patterson Show, I know I've been a little bit MIA recently, but of course, you know, definitely lots of new episodes coming soon and everything. Thank you so much for your patience and your commitment to being a TJPS listener here. If you are still here listening to the Jeremiah Patterson Show, of course, I appreciate you so, so, so very much. Of course, I've been out on hiatus a lot this year because that's because I've been doing a lot behind the scenes to make things happen. I've been out for a while, but I'm about to come back a lot stronger and with a lot of great content for you all. So thank you so very much for listening to this episode of the Jeremiah Patterson Show. Expect more content being released this week, as well as additional getting back on track to a regular flow here on TJPS. All right, have a great day. Remember to stay positive and inspired. Take care and God bless.